witnesses. The appellant has waived oral argument, and we have Mr. Hodges and Mr. Center.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Both of you going to be arguing?
I think we're going, Your Honor, I think I'll probably go first for the department leave several minutes for Mr. Center.
That's fine. You've,
Your Honor, yeah. Primarily as guardian,
I understand.
Here to answer questions, I think, more than make legal argument. I've worked with Mr. Hodge closely on this, but...
Well, you have 15 minutes, so you can use it as you wish.
Thank you, Chief.
You may begin.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
I assume you don't want any time for rebuttal.
No, sir. We're good on that, I think. May it please the court, I'm James Hodges. I represent the appellee in this case, the Washington County Department of Social Services. This is Mr. Dudley Center, who's the guardian ad litem in this case and has been involved in this case a lot longer than I've been.
Can I ask you a preliminary question that nobody seemed to address, and I have some question about, and that is, why does Virginia have jurisdiction to modify a custody order entered by the state of Tennessee under the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction and Enforcement Act?
Well, that may be a question that nobody's ever brought up, but I will try to explain why I think that would be the case. The child, and let me just say at the outset, Your Honor, and to the court, that Cynthia is present in the courtroom back here along with Mr. Jeff Russell, the foster father and prospective adopted father, along with Mr. Ketchiff from the Washington County Department of Social Services. But Ms. Eaton had a habit of moving back and forth across the state lines, and I think, Judge Petty, I think you in particular may be familiar with the area down there. Probably hadn't changed a lot.
No, it has.
Since you were
there. Where did the mother reside when DSS initiated the...
The mother was in Tennessee. She was living... Here's what happened. And
but if the mother is living in Tennessee,
well,
then we don't have... Virginia doesn't have jurisdiction to modify a Tennessee custody order.
Well, the custody order was not with respect to the mother. As the record should show, as early as 2005, the Tennessee court removed Cynthia from the home of the mother, and she was placed in various foster homes for several years, and their goal became, at some point, the court realized in Tennessee that it was not going to be feasible for Cynthia to return to the mother's home in Tennessee. The counterpart of our Department of Social Services, the Children's Protective Services in Tennessee, attempted to find non-parent relative placement. And they placed the child in Virginia.
But with that is under the acronym escapes me, the UCCJEA, that is a custody determination made by the courts of Tennessee. And when Virginia, Washington County DSS, removed the child from that placement.
From the aunt and uncle.
From aunt and uncle.
Right.
And then the Virginia court changed Tennessee's custody determination. You can't do that unless Virginia can somehow point to why it has jurisdiction. And as I read the act, if mom lives in Tennessee, Virginia courts don't have jurisdiction.
So Your Honor is saying that we need to go back to Tennessee to do this?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'll be candid, and you've caught me off guard here. This has never been raised by anybody in this case.
I agree.
So I haven't.
But it is a jurisdictional issue.
But, I mean, I guess our position is the child was living in Virginia when problems arose, and this was a great aunt and great uncle, fairly elderly folks. They were the only suitable willing relatives who took the
I'll let you off on that one. So we'll.
But don't you take custody of? Doesn't the Department of Social Services take custody of the child because her, for lack of a better phrase, legal custodian, her aunt and uncle, cannot care for her? So you take custody of her pursuant to, I guess, not a protective order, but a dependency action that's filed for abuse and neglect.
Right. That's exactly what happened here. And she's in Virginia. And at that point, that's where the aunt and uncle lived. And so the Washington County, the juvenile court awarded temporary custody to the Department of Social Services. And they did what they always do in these cases. They attempted, the exception, they didn't do what they always do in these cases. The exception being the Tennessee court had already taken the child away from the mother and had already awarded permanent custody. I know that word needs to be in quotes in these cases, but to the aunt and uncle. So at that point, it was the responsibility of the Washington County Department of Social Services to attempt to place this child in a suitable home. They did the non-parent relative search. That was to no avail. And so they were able to place the child with Mr. and Ms. Russell as foster parents. And that was done in late 2013.
On the merits of your argument, I understand the concept of full faith and credit to mean that Virginia must recognize the ultimate holding of a out-of-state court. But I don't understand full faith and credit to mean that Virginia must adopt the reasoning or the factual determinations made by the out-of-state court. So while we had to recognize the ultimate custody determination by the courts in Tennessee, we don't necessarily adopt the reasoning and the factual findings of that court. Is that a fair reading of full faith and credit?
Well, it may be that the court did not necessarily have to, but the court had the discretion to look at what the court did there. And it was not just the court orders. The record in this case contains numerous document or vast documentation from the Tennessee.
But it seems as if the Virginia court didn't make any individual determinations or findings, but rather effectively said, because Tennessee has made these findings, I'm going to adopt them. And I'm not sure that's the role of a Virginia court, just to blindly accept evidence or proof or findings of an out-of-state court.
Well, I don't think that. I guess I didn't read the court's decision as blindly accepting that. And I think the standard of review here would be that on appeal, this court must presume that the trial court thoroughly weighed all the evidence, considered the statutory requirements, and then made its determination. And there was not only the records and documentation from the Tennessee Child Protective Services Division, but also their medical records, psychiatric records that were done with respect to the mother. And there was testimony. There was testimony at the hearing from the Washington County Department of Social Services worker at the time, it was not Mr. Ketchef, but another worker, about home visitations, about dealings with the mother in the course of visitation and other issues that came up. There was testimony from Cynthia herself, and there was testimony from the mother. And just because it was direct testimony doesn't mean and there was cross-examination by myself and Mr. Center. The mother's testimony taken as a whole was not necessarily favorable to the mother and her situation. So I would respectfully respectfully suggest that the court did not just blindly follow what the juvenile court in Tennessee had done.
In the opinion letter, the court says, accordingly, the court finds by clear and convincing evidence, based upon the orders from the state of Tennessee, that the court gives full faith and credit to, the abuse and neglect suffered by the child presents a serious substantial threat, etc., etc., based on the orders from the state of Tennessee. That sounds to me like the trial court relied solely on those orders to reach its conclusion.
I can certainly see why Judge Petty, why you might be able to read that and have that impression, but I remind the court that the record went well beyond those orders for the judge. And another fact, I think.
May I ask? Please,
yes.
In that vein, I know it wasn't assigned. The introduction of those orders and the acceptance of those Tennessee orders by Judge Lowe was not assigned as error. Was there even any objection to the introduction in evidence or taking judicial notice of those orders?
No. In fact, there were requests for admissions regarding those that were not responded to. So therefore, the requests for admissions are in the record, but I hopefully worded those requests for admission such that if they were not objected to or not even responded to, they became part of the record, and we did introduce them at the trial, and there was no objection whatsoever that I recall being, and certainly not noted as. And I think a significant part of this case is that maybe counsel for the appellant overlooked or is that when the termination of parental rights, but the termination of custody and removal from the mother's home was not the issue in front of the Virginia court. That had already taken place several years before. What we were dealing with in the Washington County context here in Virginia was actually the removal from the aunt and uncle's house. There's certainly those folks were the ones that really could have, although they were not opposed to it because they were physically unable and maybe emotionally unable to continue. But that was the removal we were dealing with. And
the question, as I see it, is, and I wish appellant's counsel were here to address this because I think it's a serious and interesting question, but it seems to be when DSS removed the child, does it have to start from scratch under the Virginia statute and walk through the initial plan, goal, return to parent, then offer services, and then determine the goal needs to be changed to termination and adoption, or can it just start at the point that effectively the Tennessee court left off?
Well, it's our position, the latter, especially for 10 years.
Is there any case law at all on that? Are we writing on a blank slate on that issue?
If there's case law out there, I was unable to find it. Mr. Center was unable to find it, and Mr. Pennington was unable to find it. But I think if we look at the statute, it says look at the services rendered by any agency or any department, public or private. It doesn't say Virginia Department of Social Services or Washington County. And I think we have to look at the time frame. Here. 10 years in Tennessee, or I'm sorry, 10 years between the beginning in Tennessee and our trial court hearing back last June. Cynthia just turned 14. If she's ever going to have that stability and permanence in her life, it needs to come now. You say, well, why should somebody necessarily be adopted at 17 and a half? But she has an opportunity now to attain that. And the mother has had 10 years to achieve the ability to become a parent again, a caring, and I mean, and I won't say she's not a loving and caring parent, but a parent who can make the proper provisions for a child. If the court has any other questions, I was going to let Mr. Center speak.
I'll give you a little extra time.
Sure,
I got you involved in a discussion I don't know you had anticipated.
Not a problem.
But let me ask you one last question. There seems to be a question of what the appropriate time frame to apply to some of these findings, whether it's as of the time of the hearings in Tennessee or whether it is at the time of the hearings in Virginia. The one issue that concerns me is the question of the best interest of the child. Would you agree that the trial court has to consider that issue, the best interest of the child, as of the date of the termination hearing?
I think so. I think definitely that would be the for that particular finding. I mean, there are obviously numerous. With court's permission, I'll respond to that and then allow Mr.
If Center. You would, please.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the different timings, and of course, this particular code section 16.1283 has various sections, as the court's well aware, and under subsection B, which that in and of its Judge Lowe found on all these points, but that any one of these would be sufficient. Under subsection B, it is not reasonably likely that the conditions which resulted in such neglect, we're not talking about abuse here, can be substantially corrected or eliminated so as to allow the child safe return to the parent within a reasonable period of time. It doesn't have the 6 months, 12 months like some of the other sections do. I think that the court goes back to the time of removal, and that removal took place in Tennessee several years before. It became before the Washington County Circuit Court. And I think there's ample evidence here for the court to conclude on its own in Virginia, just as the court had in Tennessee, that and he heard evidence about what the mother's current situation was and had been since the Virginia court became involved, more than ample evidence to say that it's not reasonably likely that those conditions which resulted in the original removal were going to be corrected within a reasonable period of time. And unlike 10 minutes or 40 minutes in a workers' comp accident, I think 10 or non-accident, whichever the case may be, 10 years is certainly a reasonable time. Then you look at these other code sections, and these are two separate ones under C. C1 talks about 6 months after the child's placement in foster care. Well, the child was originally placed in foster care in Tennessee. I guess you don't necessarily consider the aunt and uncle in Virginia, but she was replaced in foster care in Virginia at the end of 2013.
I think you've addressed my question.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
And I'd like Mr. Center, he came this far, at least have a chance to say a couple of words.
I heard Judge Turk say that once. He came all this way. We ought to listen to what he's got to say.
Thank you, Your Honors. I appreciate it.
May please the court. I'm Mr. Center. I'll skip my formal introduction. We had it just a second ago. Your Honor, Justice Petty,
Judge,
you asked a question.
Don't put me
Judge
on the Supreme
Petty,
court.
I'm sorry. You asked a question I'd like to attempt to answer or address. Is Tennessee Virginia modifying a Tennessee order? And I think not, in light of the UCCJAA.
this court, or our court system here in Virginia, gained original jurisdiction over this case. Let me back up very quickly. I was the guardian ad litem on this case in Tennessee many, many years ago. I thought this case was done, and it reared its head again across the state line. Living in Bristol, that happens to us a lot. Just to back up very briefly, Judge Lauterbach in Tennessee heard this case for many, many years. There was a removal. There were services applied. The child went back home after the services were applied. As the record reflects, there were several times where the child goes back. The department steps back in because conditions immediately fall back to their original conditions. The child is removed. Services are applied again. The child goes back, or some form of visitation. Conditions fall again. The child is removed. And in a last-ditch effort, in the last order coming out of Sullivan County, Tennessee, Judge Lauterbach places the child with the Hobbs, the great aunt and uncle, great aunt and uncle, who happened to live on the Virginia side. That was an exhaustive search done to find family resources. This family had very few. There are other family members, but weren't in a position to take custody of this child. Judge Lauterbach placed the child with these elderly people who lived on the Virginia side. And at the time, you know, in their late 70s, you know, you were like, gosh, I hope this works out. And unfortunately, ultimately, it didn't. The Virginia court gained jurisdiction in 2013, I believe, when Ms. Hobbs became very ill. She had some mental problems. There was a call. The Virginia folks go out and remove the child from that situation. That's when Virginia has jurisdiction. Virginia's not modifying a Tennessee order. Virginia is stepping into this situation with original jurisdiction when they remove the child from a dangerous situation. The dangerous situation in the UCCJAA creates the emergency jurisdiction for that court to act. And it has original jurisdiction at that point because the child was living in the Commonwealth for much more than 6 months, for several years, with the Hobbs. I hope I just answered your question. So our court does have proper jurisdiction. And at that point, the department is faced with starting the steps of returning the child to the family. And of course, in this case, the mother was a family resource, and they treated her as such. And they go out and look at what family member do we place this child with now that we have it in our custody. And the mother at that time lived in Tennessee. There was a home study done in Tennessee. Tennessee came back and said the home was unfit for a child. So the department continued to look for a Tennessee resource.
What is your position, briefly, because we're running a little long
on time? Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
But what is your position on best interest of the child in this case?
I'm sorry.
What is your position as to what is in the best interest of the
permanency.
Child in this case?
Permanency for this child is in the child's best interest. The child has, on the Tennessee side of this case, been in and out of different foster situations, back and forth to the mother. The mother has proven since 2006 the child can't return to that home. The child's going to turn 18 before the mother becomes in a position to take the child. The child needs...
Assuming she ever does.
The permanency of this child is... utmost. She needs a place to do her homework, a place to hang her clothes, a place to call home, a safe place, a clean place, a place to go to school from. That is the best interest of the child, is permanency, closing the case, moving on, allowing her to live her life.
Thank you very much, and thank you for